I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Dr. Brant Courtwright, who is a licensed clinical psychologist who works from a psycho-spiritual perspective. He has practiced depth psychotherapy for 30 years in numerous contexts, from hospitals and mental health centers to workshops and private practice. For the past two decades, he has been in private practice in San Francisco, working primarily with individuals and couples. A teacher of transpersonal psychology, Brant conducts workshops and lectures in Europe, India, and the United States. His book, Psychotherapy and Spirit, Theory of Practice in Transpersonal Psychotherapy by SUNY Press, is widely used in the field. He has also authored numerous articles. For the past 20 years, he has worked in the field of integral psychology, a synthesis of the two major streams of depth psychology, the humanistic existential and contemporary psychoanalysis within an integrative East-West framework. Trained in contemporary psychoanalysis, Gestalt theory, and existential psychotherapy, Brant integrates Western psychology with SRI, Aurobindo's integrative yoga, and philosophy. A longtime practitioner of meditation and Hatha yoga, he also draws from Buddhism, Krishnamurti, and mystical Christianity. Brant is a professor of psychology and director of the Integral Counseling Psychology Program at the California Institute of Integral Studies in San Francisco. He is a past director of the Spiritual Emergence Network. His most recent book, The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, Upgrade Your Brain, Upgrade Your Life, was published this year. More information is available at www.brantcourtwright.com and at www.neurogenesis.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Courtwright, and I look forward to hearing about neurogenesis. Now first, what is neurogenesis?
So neurogenesis is the process of making new brain cells. It's how the brain regenerates itself and creates new brain cells. Mm-hmm. And it used to be thought that the brain stopped making new brain cells when we were in our early 20s.
Right, right.
And that was gospel up until the late 1990s. And just recently now, 15, 16, 17 years ago, they discovered that actually you create new brain cells throughout your entire life, although there's a slowdown in the rate at which you make new brain cells mm-hmm. in middle age, and a further slowdown in old age.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turns out that the rate of neurogenesis, the rate at which your brain makes new brain cells, is hugely important for cognition, for emotional health, for physical health, for the overall health of the brain. So your rate of neurogenesis is the most important biomarker of brain health
mm-hmm.
that most people have never heard of.
Mm-hmm. I remember when they said that brain cells do not regenerate after a certain year, after a certain age. And I think none of the neural cells did they?
That's right. They didn't think that any of them did.
I think that the whole field of epigenetics has been an exciting field because, again, so much of the DNA was, static. You couldn't change DNA.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden...
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of new stuff going on that's really exciting.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you mentioned that neurogenesis is a paradigm shift in our understanding of the brain.
That's right.
Can you tell us about that?
Well, it turns out that they didn't really know this before, but that when you have a low rate of neurogenesis, that this is associated with memory problems, with cognitive decline, with depression, with anxiety, with stress, and with even lowered immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite, when we have high rates of neurogenesis, we get cognitive enhancement, we get rapid learning, and we get protection from depression, anxiety, stress, and we get really quite robust health.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that they've discovered that you can increase your rate of neurogenesis 5 times with astonishing changes in cognition, emotional health, and physical health.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this book is, it's a holistic approach to brain health, to mm-hmm. neurogenesis. So it's body, heart, mind, spirit, a complete integral approach
mm-hmm.
to enhancing our brain function at every level.
Mm-hmm.
Because just doing one thing doesn't really do it. It's like they
right.
all have to work together.
Right, right. And I saw that you used a holistic approach, and I got very excited about that because that's what I used when I had lung cancer. And
uh-huh.
my doctor gave me the physical, but with a public health background, we had been taught that there are multiple factors that lead up to health and illness processes. And so it seemed that there had to be multiple factors that caused the disease cancer. And so to me, there should be multiple factors to use to resolve that. And so I added mental, spiritual to that, but I also, in my concept of holism, I use politics, the environment, and relationships, because they also very much influence our health. So that's why I got real excited when I saw your holistic approach to something involving the brain, because so many people focus on the physical and forget everything else, and the other is as important to me as the physical.
That's right, and it seems like the holistic approach is actually far more effective than just a purely reductionistic physical approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, they did an experiment with mice, and they gave them a holistic treatment. That isn't actually what they described.
Mm-hmm.
That's my
mm-hmm.
words for it. They gave them what they called an enriched environment, where they had great diet, they had running wheels to exercise on, they had lots of interesting nesting materials and places to explore. They gave them lots of other friendly mice to play with and explore with and mate with. And they found that the rate of neurogenesis exploded like 5 times. And that it was this total environment that did it. So, for example, one thing like aerobic exercise
mm-hmm.
has a big influence on your rate of neurogenesis. The brain just explodes with new brain cells if you do running, or if you do fast walking, or fast dancing, or swimming, or biking, or something to get your heart rate fast and your breathing fast, aerobic exercise. But it turns out that about half of those new brain cells die pretty quickly. They're pruned. Unless you also are doing other things, such as having good relationships, or eating something called hesperidin, which is a bioflavonoid in citrus fruits.
Mm-hmm.
And what hesperidin does is it increases the survival of new brain cells. So what they discovered is that the mice who they gave this enriched environment to, this holistic treatment, had big cognitive and emotional advantages over their normal neurogenesis
mm-hmm.
rate peers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was the total environment. It was the whole holistic approach that did it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the same here with human beings, that we need all of it. We need body, heart, mind, spirit. We need the complete spectrum of stimulation
mm-hmm.
in order to get optimal brain function.
The exercise piece that you mentioned is interesting, because this week I read some research that exercise will help prevent recurrence of arrhythmia in heart disease. And they did research on this, and it was independent of weight loss, because weight loss also is a factor. But just imagine that exercise will influence your heart rate. So I thought that was interesting. More and more research is coming out on exercise, and I think it's really great.
Yeah, in fact, much of what I've read shows that the most effective health intervention overall is exercise, better mm-hmm. than just about any medicine mm-hmm. or any drug that they've discovered. Mm-hmm. It's far better than anything else like that.
Well, I think most anything is better than any drug they've discovered.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's interesting. The way they discovered the significance of neurogenesis was they discovered that antidepressants also have the effect of increasing the rates of neurogenesis in people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they realized, well, wait a second, what's going on with depression? And they realized that in depression, people have low rates of neurogenesis. And the theory had been, well, if you increase serotonin levels, mm-hmm. the people are really suffering from low serotonin levels, and they have this biological illness, they need antidepressant medication for their whole lives. And modern psychiatry has kind of just taken off on this. Well, it turns out the whole thing is not true,
mm-hmm.
that increasing your serotonin levels does not affect your level of depression or mm-hmm. non-depression,
mm-hmm.
but that the way the antidepressants work is they increase your rate of neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what tuned neuroscientists into how important your rate of neurogenesis is. And it's interesting because the pharmaceutical companies now know that that whole serotonin deficiency theory is wrong. They know it's a myth,
mm-hmm.
but they're making $15 billion a year off mm-hmm. of antidepressants right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've got a good thing going.
Oh, yeah.
They are madly at work trying to find drugs to increase your rate of neurogenesis. And when they discover them, that you will hear nonstop commercials about them.
Oh, yeah.
But it turns out there are lots of natural ways of increasing your rate of neurogenesis that are probably going to be far more effective than any particular drug you can take.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree. Then, can you tell us a little bit about how the neurogenesis affects our quality of life?
Yeah. So with low rates of neurogenesis, it means that the brain is kind of sluggish. It's kind of slowing down. And this not making new brain cells at a rapid clip has an effect of decreasing our capacity to make memories, decreasing our capacity to learn. And if there's one thing that our whole self hinges on, it's memory.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's executive function or working memory, it's like when memory begins to go, everything else begins to go. And we see this in Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Alzheimer's massively attacks the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is the main area where neurogenesis happens. So in Alzheimer's, we get a loss of new memories being able to be formed, the capacity to process new memories, and everything else begins to then fall away. Executive function begins to go. The capacity to just plan what you're going to do for a day begins to go. The self itself begins to kind of fall apart. And so having a hippocampus, which is producing new brain cells at a rapid rate, is hugely important to cognition and the whole sense of self. And it's also really important for emotion regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And emotion regulation is another big function of the self, that we are always, emotion regulation means we're acting in ways to feel good or to feel better, or we're acting in ways to reduce feeling bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so particularly with stress, anxiety, and depression, emotion regulation is very important, big part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And so with low rates of neurogenesis, we also get a failure in this part of the hippocampus to regulate emotion. And so anxiety levels go way up, depression levels go way up. And as that happens, we get lowered immunity, right? That when we experience ongoing stress and anxiety, our immune system goes down very quickly. And so all kinds of other diseases then come in to play.
Mm-hmm. You know, when my mother was in her 80s, she used to watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune. She did crossword puzzles every day. And some of these things, do these help to keep your brain in shape?
Yes. So there are dietary things you can do. There are physical things, such as certain kinds of exercise. There are emotional things, and there are mental things. We need mental stimulation. That's really important.
Mm-hmm.
So mental stimulation of all kinds, reading, writing, learning new things, these things are important. And it's good to have a variety of things, because one single activity doesn't tend to generalize to the rest of the brain. So it turns out that doing crossword puzzles, for example, it helps in doing more crossword puzzles, but after about 50 crossword puzzles, it doesn't seem like even there's much of a help there, except for doing more crossword puzzles. So many things don't generalize. So like a lot of these brain games we see advertised on TV and radio, they actually don't have much generalizing capacity. So it's just, I think, a general attitude of being open to new things, new stimulation, new environments, learning new things, reading new things, exposing our brain to ongoing new learning. That's what keeps it stimulated.
Yes.
And that increases the rate of neurogenesis. That is one thing that also increases your rate of neurogenesis, new learning.
Well, one thing I did know about my mother, and that was that her vocabulary was much broader than mine. And I have a doctorate, and she finished high school. But I think a lot of it had to do with the crossword puzzles that she was doing.
Yes, and that's a function of crystallized intelligence, which just gets greater and greater as we age. You know, there's this myth that in our 20s or 30s, we reach the peak of brain function. And there are certain things which reach their peak there that demand like quick reaction time, but other things that demand more reflection or more empathy with other people, some of those don't peak until our 40s or 50s or even 60s. So if we're keeping our brain sharp, there's no reason why decline really needs to even happen, except in a few things like reaction time.
You mentioned then that it's a holistic approach, and can you tell us a little bit about the role of diet in keeping our brains healthy?
Yes, diet is really important, because if we eat the wrong things, it decreases our rate of neurogenesis. And if we eat the right things, it increases our rate of neurogenesis. So let me give you the top four things for increasing the rate of neurogenesis. The biggest one is omega-3 fatty acids. And these come from fish oil, but they also can come from algae if you are on a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet. And the algae comes in the form of EPA, which then converts to DHA. So there are three omega-3 fatty acids. There's ALA, EPA, and DHA. And it turns out our brain is made up of about two-thirds fat. And of that fat, one-third of it is DHA. And DHA we can only get from the diet. And so getting it from algae supplements or getting it from fish oil or from fish has a big impact on the quality of our brain. Another thing is blueberries. Blueberries are like Miracle-Gro for the brain. Blueberries stimulate, they're wonderful in many ways because they're anti-inflammatory, they're antioxidant, and they also stimulate neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is green tea.
Really?
The polyphenols in green tea also stimulate neurogenesis, also are antioxidant. And the thing about green tea is what we want ideally is 10 to 15 cups worth, but we don't want that much caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Because caffeine actually lowers the rate of neurogenesis.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So what we want is they actually make green tea supplements that are decaffeinated.
Oh,
that have the equivalent of 10 to 15 cups in a capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And those can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing is turmeric.
Mm-hmm.
From it's the yellow in curry spice or curcumin.
Mm-hmm.
And that also is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's a wonderful antioxidant. And it also stimulates neurogenesis. Now, in the book, I talk about 30 or 40 other nutrients.
Are grapes
that are helpful,
up there?
Yes, grape and grape seed extract can be very helpful, as well as I mentioned hesperidin, which increases the survival of new neurons.
Oh.
So when we have new neurons, we also need to keep them alive, and hesperidin is one of the things that keeps these new neurons alive and functioning.
Now, I'm not familiar with that. What is that?
It's a bioflavonoid in citrus fruits.
Oh,
and you can get it as a standalone supplement as well.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Now, there's also a lot of things in our diet that decrease neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
So a high sugar, high carbohydrate, and low-fat diet are not particularly good for the brain.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they tend to increase blood sugar level, they increase inflammation, and they decrease the rate of neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we want, ideally, is a diet that is high in healthy fats and very low in unhealthy fats and has just minimal carbohydrates, particularly if we are somewhat insulin resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And about 80% of the population in America is insulin resistant at this point, which means there are higher blood sugar levels in the brain, and higher blood sugar levels mean a faster rate of cognitive decline. So one of the best things you can do for your brain is to find out, are you insulin resistant or not? And so there's a very simple blood test called a hemoglobin A1C that tells, are we insulin resistant or not? And again, most people with the American diet have some degree of insulin resistance. And so their brain is already in decline. And you can chart cognitive decline and blood sugar levels almost perfectly on a graph.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we want to try to bring our blood sugar level down. I want to stop being insulin resistant, which for many people means really reducing carbohydrates, particularly simple carbohydrates, and increasing good protein, and good fats, healthy fats. And by healthy fats, I mean non-oxidized fats.
Mm-hmm.
So oxidized fats become rancid. So like with heat or light, like vegetable oils, if you cook with them, they tend to go rancid. They have a low smoke point. And so cooking with coconut oil or cooking with ghee or butter is much, much better than cooking with vegetable oils. Cooking with vegetable oils puts oxidized fats into your bloodstream, which increases your rate of inflammation, and it also lowers your rate of neurogenesis.
Does that include olive oil?
Olive oil is okay. It's best not used in cooking. And if you do cook with it, only at very low temperatures, because that also can oxidize with cooking. So you have to be careful there to either use it at low temperatures or better using something like coconut oil or butter or ghee, which you can use at very high temperatures and it's fine.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there a relationship between neurogenesis and cholesterol? And the reason I ask this is because when I eat much coconut oil, my cholesterol goes up. And when I stop the coconut oil, my cholesterol goes back down. And the same thing happens with, what was the other oil that did it? But people have told me that you don't need to worry about the 150 cutoff, because usually my cholesterol is under 150. But they said that it should really be up more close to 200, because the brain needs this, you know, in order to function properly, needs the oils. So is there any relationship between the cholesterol?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And that's absolutely right, that the American Medical Association has been on this low cholesterol kick for some time. But what they're finding with people who are taking these statins, who are getting lower and lower cholesterol levels, is that they have memory problems.
Oh, oh.
And that it seems like even some of this coming wave of Alzheimer's may even be in part due to the statins and the low cholesterol levels. That's right, that the cholesterol levels of 200 and even into the 200, low 200s or even mid 200s, is not a particularly big deal.
Oh.
What's a bigger deal is the type of cholesterol. Is it the big, fluffy type of molecules, or is it the low, very, very dense kind, which are more dangerous?
Mm-hmm.
And so most people don't have this blood test done, but it's another good one to do to find out the type of LDL molecules that you have.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's right, we need cholesterol for memory.
Mm-hmm.
We need cholesterol for a good functioning brain. And lowering it lowers neurogenesis, and it lowers the quality of our brain, which lowers the quality of our life. It's a big, huge paradigm shift that's happening in medical science right now.
Mm-hmm.
And most MDs are behind the curve on this.
Then can you tell us some about exercise? You've mentioned it, but I'm sure there's more. The role of exercise.
Yeah, so it turned out that just moving is important for the brain. The brain makes all kinds of chemicals that are really helpful to it when we move. And when we don't, there's other chemicals that get produced that degrade our cognitive function. So there are many different kinds of exercise. Things like yoga, for example, are wonderful for many things, but they don't really help neurogenesis. They may help it in an indirect way by reducing stress, because high stress levels reduce our rate of neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
So yoga would have an indirect effect on increasing neurogenesis by reducing stress levels. But the best kind of exercise for increasing neurogenesis is aerobic exercise, something that gets you breathing hard. So it's like whatever you can do, if you can just start walking a little bit, and then if you are walking, walk a little bit faster for 20 or 30 minutes a day. That kind of exercise where you are breathing hard, where you're having to really get your heart rate up and you therefore need more oxygen, is the best kind of exercise you can get for your brain. So however you do that, if it's biking, if it's swimming, if it's walking, if it's going upstairs, if it's fast dancing, whatever it is that gets you breathing fast, that is very, very helpful. And it doesn't take a lot. There are big changes in the brain which come about even from 20, 30 minutes a few times a week. If you can do it daily, even better.
What you mentioned, that the paradigm shift, but I'm wondering if genetics still does not have a role in brain functioning. If it's, the combination of the genes and the environment. And as I say, I'm still wondering if the genetics still doesn't have a partial role.
Oh, of course it does. Most of the literature that I've looked at gives it a role of somewhere around 20%. Mm-hmm. Some people say 10%, some people say 30%, mm-hmm. many people say 20%, and lifestyle factors tend to outweigh that because of this field of epigenetics, as you're mm-hmm. saying, that, mm-hmm. that lifestyle will actually determine what genes are expressed or not expressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the genetic piece is lifestyle, mm-hmm. that as we change our lifestyle, we actually change the expression of our genes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then you mentioned stress. Is there more that you want to talk about stress's role in brain health?
Yeah. So it turns out that there's good stress and bad stress, right?
Mm-hmm.
Good stress is short-term, moderate stress. It's like we need stress in order to get stronger. Like if we exercise a muscle, it stresses that muscle.
Mm-hmm.
And when we rest, it builds that muscle back up again, and it gets stronger. And so what exercise does is it stresses the body, but in a good kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
It's temporary, it's moderate, and the body is stronger afterwards. So same with emotional stress or interpersonal stress, work stress. These kind of stresses help make us stronger. They help bring forth new capacities within us. The self grows through moderate, reasonable stress. However, long-term stress, continuous stress, or super high levels of stress have the opposite effect on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
They decrease our rates of neurotransmitters. They actually shrink the hippocampus. They actually are neurotoxic. And that's the kind of stress we mostly see in society today. We see people who are just stressed all the time. It just goes on and on and on. Being connected to the internet, cell phone, it's like work stress. We bring it home with us. There's just, it's nonstop. And so what we need to do is to have periods where there is no stress, where our body comes back to a homeostatic balance. And so unplugging from the internet, having one good function of exercise is it brings us back to a homeostatic balance.
Mm-hmm.
It gets us out of this, it creates more physical stress, but then we recover, and there's like, there's relaxation afterwards. We need relationships, people mm-hmm. with whom we feel safe
mm-hmm.
and whom we can feel comforted by, who we can just share our deepest pains and struggles with, and who will put a reassuring hand on our shoulder and really let us know we're okay. We need these kind of loving, supportive relationships
mm-hmm.
in order to handle the stress we have. We can't do it all alone. We also need other people here.
Right.
So if you are in a job or a situation where there's just ongoing stress, that's not good. You need to find some way of dealing with stress and to reduce the stress. And where there are periods of non-stress and of deep peace. And that's one of the functions, I think, of the meditation techniques.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, there's a spiritual dimension to this also. And it turns out that two kinds of spiritual practice seem to also have a big effect on neurogenesis rates.
Mm-hmm.
And these two spiritual practices are different kinds of mindfulness practice and different kinds of devotional or heart-opening practices.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these, they both lower stress, but they also have other effects that they can't entirely figure out what they are. You know, they used to think that nothing happens when you're meditating because the mm-hmm. person's just sitting there quietly.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out when we do brain imaging studies, that it's a very dynamic process. the brain is engaged in many ways in meditation that we can see through these brain imaging studies. So it's a very dynamic process in meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And these two kinds, mindfulness practice, like paying attention to the breath, or paying attention to the here and now, whatever is arising, mm-hmm. passing away in the here and now, and devotional practices, like devotional prayer, or heart-opening practices, compassion, loving-kindness practices, these also have a very deep and profound effect on the brain and on the nervous system. And seems to be that the entire length of the hippocampus gets stimulated with these practices.
Now, would gratitude be a devotional?
Yes. Gratitude practices are very helpful to this. These are part of the heart-opening practices. Yes, that's right.
Because I see a lot of gratitude postings on Facebook over the last 6 months. So I suspect that that is Thanksgiving. Would that be another devotional?
Yes, absolutely. That's right. That's right.
Petitioning would not be?
Pardon?
Petitioning prayers where you're asking for help for other people, that would not be a devotional?
Well, if it's for other people, then it would be. That's a compassion practice. That's a form of compassion where you're really wanting to send out help and spiritual solace to other people.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a heart-opening practice. If it's just for yourself, again, it depends on the state of consciousness in which you're doing it. If you're doing it from just a desperate, please give me this $1,000, it probably isn't going to have much of an effect on neurogenesis. But if it's coming from a place of deep surrender, of deep openness to the divine and love for the divine, and as part of that, you're also asking for help in your life, then yes, that kind of prayer would also be considered a devotional or heart-opening practice as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, why did you get involved in this whole field?
Well, I was starting to write a book on a holistic approach to depression.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was exploring the physical dimensions of it, I ran across this research, which is not well known still,
mm-hmm.
that shows that the whole serotonin deficiency theory is wrong and that the real story of depression has to do with neurogenesis.
Mm-hmm.
And then it occurred to me, wow, even bigger than depression is this whole story of neurogenesis, that mm-hmm. people need to know about this, that when we increase our rate of neurogenesis, we can live and operate at a much higher rate than we are now, that we live in such a neurotoxic society that all of us are at lower rates of neurogenesis than we could be.
Mm-hmm.
We are all operating at a much lower rate than we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can increase our rate and be operating at a much higher rate cognitively, emotionally, spiritually, and physically than we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got on fire with this idea of increasing rates of neurogenesis and wanting to tell the world about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm feeling a little bit short on mental stimulation in neurogenesis. You know, because you said that the crossword puzzles and the game shows and all are not necessarily, but it should be new learning experiences. So are there things that people can do for the mental stimulation piece?
Yes, that's right. So reading is one thing. All sorts of things. Reading on the internet, reading books, mm-hmm. reading novels, self-help stuff, Twitter feeds, social media posts. It just doesn't matter what you read.
Mm-hmm.
Reading anything is going to be good for your brain. But if you can also read not just short clippings or short stories, but also novels or full-length books,
mm-hmm.
that builds your attention.
Mm-hmm.
That builds your capacity to concentrate and focus.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is good. Emails, blog posts, a journal, Facebook updates. Writing also engages your brain. Different kinds of problem solving, so puzzles or board games or card games, house repair questions, work problems. And like discussion groups, talking with things with your about things with your friends. So articulating our thoughts, expressing ourselves out loud, a give and take in a conversation about how should we do something, or what did you think of this movie, or just conversations where we're talking with other people about ideas or about something of interest to us. Musical training can be good also. That works on the right side of our brain, which can be good. Taking classes, whether it's like a cooking class or a continuing education class, lifelong learning. Some people find this is helpful to take classes, but you can also do this online these days. There are webinars. There are all sorts of online learning possibilities now. It doesn't have to be a formal education. There's lots of informal ways that we learn things. Attention and concentration exercises. And here again, we come to different kinds of meditation or prayer, which are essentially training our consciousness to focus on a particular thing. And as we do that, as we train our attentional capacities, we stimulate the brain. So these also are very helpful.
Does passion play a role in any of this?
Oh, passion is in some ways the key to the whole thing. That when we are following our passion, we are engaged. And it's this quality of engagement with the world which is probably the most important thing. When we are in this, it's like our brain wants us to engage with the world. It wants us to engage physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, in all ways. And as we engage, the brain gets stimulated. So if we're doing something that doesn't engage our passion, we're kind of only half there, half involved. That is kind of a turnoff for the brain. It's not particularly stimulating. So following our passion leads us to our abilities, to our skills and talents. It leads us to engage the world and engage our brain with the world. And that's what stimulates neurogenesis. Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head here. That is the key to this whole thing.
Good. Now, is there anything else you'd like to say before we look at your books and products or services, etc.?
This has been an amazingly comprehensive interview. We've sort of touched on all the different areas. There's much more in the book about all this, but this has been I appreciate your holistic approach here because, you know, when it comes to Alzheimer's prevention or preventing cognitive decline, it appears that the only evidence for anything being of help is a holistic approach. So there have been billions spent on drugs by drug companies at this point, billions of, and hundreds of drug trials that have resulted in 100% failure. No drug is helpful in treating or postponing cognitive decline or Alzheimer's. We have drugs that help the symptoms for a few months, but that's all. It's the one major disease there is no drug for and nothing really on the horizon even. But it turns out that a holistic approach is the one thing that has been shown to be helpful with cognitive decline and the prevention of cognitive decline. So there isn't much money in holistic research, right? Most drug companies, most researchers, they're looking for the next big drug to make a fortune on. But there's a place in California called the Buck Foundation that has started to do some holistic research. So they've used, I ran across this just before the book was published, and so there's just a paragraph or two in the book about this. But what they did was a very simplified version of what I talk about in the book, a body, heart, mind, spirit approach.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that people who had experienced cognitive decline had it reversed. And people who had had to stop working because of cognitive decline were able to go back to work for 2 years that they followed them.
Mm-hmm.
So it appears that the only way to prevent or to work with cognitive decline or Alzheimer's is this kind of holistic body, heart, mind, spirit approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, I think, is big news. I think that should be on the front page of the New York Times.
Right.
But we hardly hear about it.
Right, right. Well, see, I thought my lung cancer should be on the front page, too, because I was given 6 months to live 41 years ago, and I used a holistic approach. And I think each piece was as important as the other piece, and it was putting it all together that made the difference. But unfortunately, it never got on the New York Times front page. Never got on any page. I know you have limited time left, so at this point, Dr. Cartwright, would you tell us about your books then and services, and if you have products, and your website?
Okay, it's just, all I really have is this book. I also do brain health coaching by Skype, and I have a private practice in San Francisco where I do that. But the book is called The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle, and you can get it at Amazon, or you can get it, order it through any bookstore. And my website is BrantCourtwright.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's BrantCourtwright.com. And the book, again, is The Neurogenesis Diet and Lifestyle.
And people can reach
And I thank you.
People can reach
people
you
can
then,
reach
through
me.
Your website.
Through my website, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, this has been very interesting, and I know it will be helpful for people that want to avoid Alzheimer's and want to have a better life, and so I appreciate this very much.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. I thank you for joining us today on the Holistic Health Show. In the time left, I would like to tell you about the new Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation. As you know, I am a 40-year lung cancer survivor who was given 6 months to live and subsequently decided to use all natural holistic interventions that were very successful in my life. You also know that I wrote my experience in a book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer, Using Alternative Integrative Interventions, so that others could follow a holistic approach as I did. The next step seemed to be to establish a foundation to bring word to other people that the holistic approach can be very successful. I envisioned holistic approach as including physical, mental, spiritual, relationships, environment, and politics, so that our foundation varies from others in that we do look at a holistic approach, we do focus on all types of cancer, and we do focus on education, research, and patient care. We are starting this year to build our website, which will have a variety of interviews with cancer survivors, with cancer physicians, with people who use alternative approaches such as affirmations, prayer, visualization, meditation, serving others, and more. Our goals for the foundation then are to provide education to the public on the holistic approach to cancer treatment. Second would be to provide funding for research on holistic cancer interventions. And third would be to provide financing for those who suffer from cancer and want alternative natural treatments. In order to do this, we need public funding. And so this year, we will be focusing on the educational piece, and also we'll be focusing on hopefully providing funding for one grant. So I hope you will consider donating to my foundation. On the website, which is holisticcancerfoundation.com, you'll find a place to donate, and I hope you will consider donating so that this foundation will move forward, helping others to use a holistic approach in cancer treatment. On the website, you will also find research on some of the alternative interventions, such as affirmations, meditation, prayer, visualization, as well as the research on natural ways to deal with cancer for the year 2014, including things like nutrition, diagnoses, etc. I hope you will go to the site and look it over and give me some feedback as to what else you might like to see on the website. There are a couple sections that are not complete, but we are working on those at this point. Again, the website is holisticcancerfoundation.com. I have a tax-free status so that you can deduct your donations from your income tax in the United States. I invite you to my websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the past shows from the last 5.5 years under the blog with a search engine so you can look for a specific topic. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health and the latest information on research on cancer, also under the blog. I also invite you to my website, beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You will also find endorsements. You will find additional information about the book, and you will also find a site where you can purchase the book from me, or you can also purchase it at Amazon.com. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under Carl Helvey or under Holistic Health Show or under Beat Lung Cancer. I also invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey or on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.